You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Can't hear you now, Bruce. Can't hear you, Bruce.
Mute button's on. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah, you're, Bruce, I can't hear you.
Wayne, he's telling you to go ahead and run with it.
I'll wait just a second here. Everyone, to another wonderful time with LA Talk Radio and my partner.
Here I am.
The one and only Bruce Cameron will introduce and take over from now. Bruce, take it away.
Well, good. Thanks for coming on the show today. And love to always have folks from Salad Master come on the show. It's just a pleasure to have you. And if you would, kind of tell us a little bit about your background. I know you got the background with the Salad Master, but what got you into the sales field and how you came about where you're at today?
Well, thanks, Bruce.
Let me interrupt you because
sure.
That's a long deal.
The greatest hit.
Yeah, that's a long deal. And let me first of all, we're very fortunate to have Dave Bryant and beyond. Matter of fact, when I say the word beyond, it could be anywhere. But Dave has been with Salad Master. Dave, how many years?
We're in our 14th year, Wayne, so really pleased to be here.
Well, I'll tell you what I'd like to start off with is Bruce's question, but I kind of want to modify it just a little bit. Because to me, I mean, we're very dear friends, Dave. That's what Salad Master has a quality of doing to people. It turns them into your best friends. And so your direct sales journey, I kind of want to guide you a little bit on this, but it didn't start in the direct sales business. I want to go get in the Wayback Machine, Dave, because you have a very interesting background that formed your habits.
Well, I know where you're going. Okay.
But I want you to start there. I mean, really, I mean, that's a different deal. You know, okay. Go back to those days in Saskatchewan and stuff.
All right. Well, first of all, I grew up as a young prairie boy in Saskatchewan and highly motivated to make some money. We came from a poor family. And I used to push my dad's lawnmower door to door, cut grass for a dollar a lawn. A lot of people did that. But one day I cut the grass of a wealthy fella in our town who happened to run a traveling carnival. And he was impressed with me, Bruce. He ran over to see my mom and said, "I'd like to take this young man of yours on the road a little while and have him run some of our sideshow games and our kiddie rides and have some fun." And she said, "Well, he's pretty young." He said, "Don't worry, I'll take care of him. We got a lot of adults here." He was well-known and well-respected. I was 10 at the time. And, wow. You know, everyone says, "Well, you ran away with the circus." No, it was a carnival. No lions and tigers. But we went to work, and I worked there for a total of 10 years on and off. And started out as a kid running the hoopla games and collecting cash from people and spinning the wheel and working the microphone and selling popcorn and cotton candy. And by the time I was 16, I was the foreman of the show. I had 25 employees. And that's a lot of work for a 16-year-old. So I learned some of my leadership skills early on, and I learned some the wrong way. In those days, unfortunately, sometimes we settled arguments with fists, and of course that doesn't work. Well, as time went on, I found myself needing a job at the end of the season. And in 1978, I got a job as a door-to-door salesman, selling vacuum cleaners door-to-door. And boy, Everyone in the world thought that was hard work, but after 10 years of being a carny, that's a piece of cake. Because carnies work extremely hard, probably underestimated. So as time went on, I became a pretty good salesman, and then a national champion.
You froze up, Dave.
I got my head straight and became a national champion salesman, and eventually they roped me into a job to become a manager. And now the world changes. Now I had to become a leader of people instead of just leading myself. Everything's different from that point on. So that's how I started as a leader, was in a position taking care of people as a branch manager in a direct selling company. So Wayne, what other questions you want to keep leading?
Well, I want to delve into some of that, because that's a pretty broad brush swipe. It's good though. And now there is something else. You might as well say it. I want to hear it. Our listeners would love to hear it, because Dave, again, it's a very casual conversation where it's called the Concierge Coach's Corner, but everything that we talk about on this show eventually leads to coaching, or can be directed towards coaching, no matter what field anyone is in. And so we want to enjoy it and have fun and know the person's heart and soul a little bit, what makes them tick. And one thing came out of that carnival that stuck with you forever, hasn't it?
Yeah, Wayne, I was fortunate enough to be a good recruiter early on, and I recruited a young lady to work with us, and that's my wife, Flo, and she's still here hanging around 42 years later. So, I was very fortunate. And the other part...
You had to be one whale of a salesperson to land that lady.
Yeah, thank you.
She's the greatest and the best.
So
when you were in...
I'm going to send you another Christmas card this year.
I want you to, if you don't mind, in your vacuum days in Canada, you know, you just said it was easy because working in a carnival was really hard. But can you delve into that a little bit more? What I mean is, where did you start? Where did you start in the vac business? Was it in Saskatchewan?
Yeah, Regina, Saskatchewan, and the area around there. And it's a pretty pleasant place about 6 months of the year, and the rest of the time is just cold, and then it gets to be super cold, and then downright Arctic. So, it'll challenge you. And we knock doors, Bruce, from 9:30 in the morning till 9 at night, even in the dead of winter with blizzards and snowstorms, because that's the only way we saw customers. We didn't have leads. We didn't have telemarketers. We didn't have advertising. We just knock doors and talk to people. So it teaches you to be resilient and teaches you to work hard. And Wayne, as leaders, the first thing we have to develop is a really strong, resilient attitude. We got to believe that on that next door, something good is going to happen. And if anybody ever gives us any, you know, trouble on a doorstep, they're having a bad day and it's not their fault. And we just need to leave that baggage behind us, because we were always unfailingly warm and polite and exciting, and we were not high pressure. We just kept on hitting the numbers. And Wayne, a box of business cards had 500 cards in it, and I took two boxes every Monday morning, 1,000 cards, rubber stamped them, and until I gave away 1,000 cards face-to-face, no one was home, I'd put them in their door till I gave away 1,000 cards each week. My week was not over. So that's what I did for a long time. And it builds character, it builds confidence, and, I had a lot of bad weeks because I had a lot of times when I wasn't properly motivated, didn't have my goals set, and had a lot of good weeks.
Let me ask you something, Dave. You told me a story one time, but you're great at this. I love listening to your stories, but you were complaining to another guy about knocking doors. You didn't like it.
Wow, that's a great story. So in 1980, I won a trip. And I won airfare for two to Florida. So I came down to where I am now, the Tampa area, and went to Tampa, St. Petersburg, and Clearwater. And Wayne, I went to the Clearwater office. And there was a gentleman there who was the manager, Bruce. His name was Carlos Garcia, I'm pretty sure. For sure it was Carlos, last name Garcia, maybe. And I was in the sister company in Canada. He was in the sister company in the U.S. I attended his meeting, and then a big truck came in. So I went out back and helped him unload the truck and got all the inventory in. And Bruce, I was knocking on doors. He said, "Why do you hate knocking on doors?" I said, "Oh, it's cold, it's windy, and I get tired, and sometimes people are not nice to me." And he says, "Dave, I love knocking on doors." And I said to myself, I just blurted it out. I said, "What do you mean you love it?" He says, "Dave, I live in America, and I can go out and knock on doors and talk to people every day, and I'm so thankful." I said, "Well, why?" He said, "Because I spent 18 years in Castro's prison breaking rocks every day."
Wow.
And he said, "All I had to look forward to was getting my sledgehammer and breaking rocks 18 years. For me to walk down a street and knock on a door and talk to someone face-to-face in America, a free man, and make money doing it is a dream come true." Whew. After that, I shut up. I went back home and started working. I mean, you know, your selling has been great to me and to my wife, and we've earned a phenomenal living and done well. But it's all in the eye of the beholder. You know, you got to see what you got.
That perspective.
Yeah.
Dave, you have some nice songs down there that you rent out too, don't you?
Pardon me? Say that again, Wayne?
You have some real estate property that you rent out?
We do. We've been fortunate enough to slowly over the years, we've bought houses and apartments, and we have a cabin in the Smoky Mountains, and you know, just hardworking folks. But you know, I studied my bosses, Wayne, and I studied success. And my second boss was a wonderful Polish guy named Henry Grabarczyk, and he worked very hard. By the time he was 45, Bruce, he had personally purchased over 40 houses, all two bedrooms, one bath, all in the city that he lived in. And as time went on, they all grew in value. And I saw his wife about 7 years ago. And I said, "What's Henry doing?" She says, "He's at the casino. He's having fun." And I said, "Well, what are you doing with the houses?" She says, "We sell one every year. We get $250,000 for it, and he blows it in the casino." But, you know, there's a big lesson there. There's a lot of money to be made in real estate, but I wasn't a real estate agent. We were just smart enough to buy houses, take really good care of them, rent them out to people, and they grow in value. And That's what many of my bosses did that were direct sellers. Wayne, you know, at one point I lost track, but I knew over 50 men and women that were direct sellers that were also multimillionaires. Money in the business, but investing in precious metals, a little bit in the stock market, and real estate. So that's a message for anybody that's on this show is, you know, just watch what successful people do. Because, you know, I mean, I got kicked out of school in the 12th grade. I didn't get through college, but I sure made a lot of money and had a lot of big responsibilities by watching what successful people do.
Dave, as a dealer, and Bruce, jump in if you got a question anytime. I'm sorry, but Dave, as a dealer, right now in the time that I've known you, to as a coach, I've many times one of your big attributes, I think, because again, you have been one of the top dealers in Salavest, and you are one of the top dealers in Salavest. And you don't sit on your laurel. You're working all the time. I mean, I'll tell you right now, right this minute as we're speaking, your right knee's bouncing up and down, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I mean, you don't stop. And you get people that you you push them. You really, and when I say push, you push, but you also pull them. You're doing a push-pull at the same time. Cessna made an airplane like that called the push-pull. Had two propellers, one in the front and one in the back. Go different directions. But anyway, you do that. You've got a guy that is your sales manager who, if you had not worked with him, he would still be an employee of the city. And now Walter is doing a stupendous job. He brought in some really fabulous people. You'll take him by the hand, and you and Walter will walk outside on a day that you just walk outside and you start sweating, and you go knock doors and you cut salads. And Walter will get booked up. And that's why he's been successful. You know it, and I know it, is because you have that habit of making people successful.
Well, Wayne, there's a lot to that. That's a whole package of stuff, and I'll comment about that in a few different ways, and you can let me know if I get off track. But the number one thing is you got to see people as they will be, not as they are today. You got to have some vision for people in the future, you know, and see them as they can be and they will be, not as they are today. Today's struggling, broken salesperson is next year's national champion. Today's so-so salesperson might be next year's top distributor. Today's fighting challenge distributor might be next year's new dealer. But you are responsible as a leader to bring out the best in people. So I think if I've developed a skill, the skill is to see people as they can be and then to introduce them to that concept and keep working on their vision. Because if we get the vision right, if we get their idea, the reason why they could do something and want to do something right, then we can set the goals and then we can work an action plan that's daily, weekly, monthly. But it all starts with the vision. And most people, Wayne, they don't have that vision. We have it. Even as a young salesman, I remember people sitting down with me and saying, you know, you could be really good at this someday, and you just got to work at it. And my wonderful old manager, Henry, used to say, you young fellas will run the company someday. You got to get to work. You got to work hard. You'll run the company someday. And we're just walking around 21 years old looking for the next, you know, pool hall. And he's telling us, you got what it takes. And, you know, I remember that conversation because 5 years later, I was offering Henry a contract for $150,000 to move to Vancouver Island. I was a vice president. But see, he saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. So it starts with us as leaders, seeing something in people and then stroking that vision, then the goals, then the action plan. So I hope that helps our audience. It's, we see what people can become, and then we got to take them up to that level. And some things along the way that'll help us. You know, Wayne, I over the years worked in four companies, and I've watched 10 different CEOs that I reported to. And I've watched them all do a job. Some of them were phenomenal, and some of them were not so phenomenal. But you can learn from everybody. And some of them were just good guys. One of them went on to become the chairman of the Sara Lee Corporation. Big job. Those are big jobs. But what I found is that the ones that were successful lost their ego along the way. And they just went out and became serious servant leaders. They didn't live with this big I'm the boss ego. They lived with the challenge of how can I help John? How can I make Susan better? How can I be there for my people? And that's a big deal. That's what some people can't do. I've seen a couple that were just horrifying, and they had these big egos. Oh, they wanted everybody to go get their coffee and bow down to them. And, you know, they wanted to be serenaded on stage and dear God, that's not what leadership's about and business is about. We have to be, to get anywhere, we have to be servant leaders. Wayne, you've always come in my offices and worked hard. And I can remember your friend and mine, Keith Peterson, at 11 o'clock at night as the president of the company out in the parking lot helping me throw trash bags out after a big cooking school. And he shouldn't have done that, didn't have to do that. But he had his sleeves rolled up and he was participating and helping. And that's what moves people. That's what gets people to the next level, that kind of thing. And I got a few other little buzz phrases along the way. I read a book many years ago. It's by the guy that wrote, I think it's Ken Blanchard, wrote 1 Minute Manager. Mm-hmm. One of his books was, I think it was, it was the 1 Minute Leader or 1 Minute Manager, one of those. He said, catch people doing something right. Yeah. And I struggled with that, Bruce. I was like, what does that mean? What in the world does that mean? I read it over and over, and I said, okay, catch them doing something right. And he gave lots of examples. Then I listened to the audio version of it, and then I got it. And basically it means when someone new starts and they do the smallest thing, you applaud that if it's right and make them feel good. Catch them doing something right and reward them. Catch them doing something right and reward them. You know, Bruce, it's funny. As soon as this presentation is over, Wayne will automatically call me and say, you did a good job. Even if I didn't do the best job, he'll tell me that because that's the way good leaders are programmed. Catch people doing something right. And then they'll want to do it again and again. They'll want to do it better and they'll want to do it faster. Another rule for leaders is to learn to manage upwards. We all have a boss. Even the CEO has a boss, the shareholders or the board of directors. So we need to learn to manage upwards. I remember working really hard for a phenomenal boss in New York for 5 years. And we talked about our day, and I said, what are you doing today? He says, today I'm managing upwards. I said, you're the boss. Who are you managing to? He said, I got 6 directors on my board I got to talk to in advance of the meeting because we've got to make an investment for $20 million. And he said, I've got to lay it out, and I've got to get each of them to understand in advance and what I need, what I want, and why, so this meeting goes smoothly. He said, everybody has a boss. Wow, that's a big concept for a kid from the prairies. But as soon as you get it, you remember it and you start managing upwards. Wayne, I talked to you yesterday about a conversation with a boss. And you learn how to get along. And of the 10 different CEOs, I was on mission with 9 of them and got it right. Only one guy I could never read correctly, and I never got total job satisfaction, and he never got the best out of me. I just couldn't get on his wavelength. But I was having coffee one day, Bruce, with the CEO, and in the trenches as a salesman or in the U.S. Army and saying yes sir to someone. And I said, okay. And he said, you know, I spent the second half of my life having people say yes sir to me. And I thought about that. And Bruce, what do you think my words were next? Yes, sir. Because he was quietly sending me a message that that's how he wanted to be addressed. And he was also sending me a message. I should pay attention to him because I wasn't paying enough attention. So that's part of managing upwards, listening hard. And I'm, you know, listen, I'm not perfect at it, trying to, you know, improve all the time, trying to improve, not perfect at it. Wayne, I wrote down something else. I hope it works for our audience. Is in any organization, I learned this from a business consultant about 8 years ago, and I wrote it down. He said, there's 3 things that make an excellent organization work. He said, this is a self-test. See if you have them in your organization. If you do, your organization's going to work well. If you don't, it's doomed for failure. He says, the first thing is your people have to make money. Hmm. He said, they got to make a lot of money. You're going to demand a lot from them. He said, now, if you have salaried folks, instead of having 10 people at $800 a week, have six people at $1,250. You'll pay the same amount of money, but you'll get a lot more action. He said, you don't need a lot of bodies. You need a number of good bodies. So he said, you got to pay a lot of money. He says, most people in business start out from this concept of how do I pay the least to someone? He said, so think about that. He said, the second thing is your people have to see a path for advancement. If they can't see advancement and they can't believe they can advance and you can't describe advancement to them, they're already on their way out the door. They're stuck. So I had to think, okay, does my operation give people room for advancement? And that's when I started to realize that responsibility and titles and reviews are way more than buzzwords. They're really, 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 really important. And he said, the last thing is recognition. He said, you got to have good, solid recognition, Bruce, for people, whether they're new, they've just been there a year, they've been there 5 years or 10 years. There's a reason companies give a 5-year award and a 10-year award, a 20-year award, and a 40-year award. He said, if you don't have those three things, your business is folding up. If you have two of those three, it's going to be a fight. But if you ace all three of those in the proper manner, you've got a company that's going to last and last and last, and a business that will grow and grow and grow. So recognition, advancement, money, no particular order. You got to have all three. And I took that to heart. I studied my organization. I worked hard to kind of reorganize it and really hear that lesson. And by gosh, it's all true. And even, you know, Wayne, we have an annual end of the year celebration. We have about 50 salespeople here and 5 staff. And, you know, we catch everybody doing something right at year end. We give a Rookie of the Year award, but we have 5 or 6 awards that we give out for people for most helpful and the best team player. And the, you know, and those are really important awards.
I've been to a few of those.
Yeah. Those
everybody
are
the people in the room. Everybody in the room is recognized.
Yeah. And we're not talking participation awards, Bruce. Oh, you're here, so here's something. No. We're talking you were a team player. At least 10 times last year, you drove an extra 100 miles to deliver someone inventory or got on the phone and helped someone, and we appreciate it. Well, when you hand that little lady or little gentleman that plaque, and this is their part-time business, they're maybe making $12,000, $20,000, $40,000 a year working part-time, Bruce. You give them that plaque, says you were seen, you were recognized, and we love you. Mm-hmm. When you go to their house, you'll find that plaque on the wall in their office. They're going to remember that. So,
hey, Dave, let me a couple things. One is you got a guy in your organization, and I won't say a name, but he cuts grass.
Oh yeah,
and what's, this guy's amazing. Just touch on, where's he from? How'd he get with you? And I mean, because he gets recognition a lot too, and he deserves it. And then talk about another guy who found his why. That was his to get his mom a house.
Perfect.
Because these are things that I think you help them get what they want. And Zig Ziglar, you know, always was famous for saying, we can get anything in life we want if we just help enough other people get what they want.
Yeah. Well, the gentleman that you're referring to who owns a landscaping business works extremely hard. My gosh, he cuts probably 60 to 70 yards a week himself. And the crazy thing is, Bruce, he's allergic to grass. He said the best thing that ever happened to him is COVID, because he put a mask on and started feeling better because he wasn't sneezing and dying of allergies all the time. But anyway, he works 50, 60 hours a week as an immigrant, cutting grass for people. He's been doing it for 10 years. He is an elder in his church, Wayne. He spends about 10, 12 hours a week in that church. And we're third on his list. And he sells Salad Master products to people. He might drive 50 or 100 miles to cook them a presentation, do a live in-home dinner for them, and sell a $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 set. And he's been doing it for years and years and years, and very successfully. But we recognize him every year. We recognize him every chance we get. And, you know, sometimes his accent's a little tough on us, but we've tuned our ears to learn to listen to that beautiful Haitian accent and really understand, because he's important. Every person on our team is important. And, you know, one of the things we suffer at is intolerance in America. And I see people say, oh, I didn't understand that girl. I don't get her accent. Well, that's your problem. We have people that work with us from 16, 17 countries, and we kill ourselves to figure out their accent and what it is they're saying, and listen carefully and strive for clarity. You know, here's a phrase that can help our listeners, Bruce. Again, one of my most influential bosses used to say, so the reason business fails is clarity. So we'd do a meeting and he'd say, what are we going to do next? I'd say, the plan is this. Boom, boom, boom. He'd say, okay, Dave, just to be clear, the plan is this. You're going to do this and this and this, and that's how much it costs. So we agree, just to be clear? Yes, we do, sir. Okay, just to be clear. Now, Wayne, you know, I've been using that phraseology for so long. If you come in my office, you'll hear consultants say, now, Dave, just to be clear, this is what I'm going to do. Because it's become a little bit of part of the subculture here, is they don't even realize they're saying it. But clarity is everything.
Oh, boy, we know that well. And that's, I think, a sign in a good leader also.
Well,
that's one of the pillars, too.
Yeah. And sure. Remember, I don't know that I'm a good leader. I know that it's a work in progress, and I work really hard on it. And I don't want to ever let that ego stick up, because the way you submerge the ego is you help others. Keep helping others. Because those people that put that ego up and they start pounding their chest, they're immediately due for a fall. That's what I know. Just help others. Be a servant leader. The other guy you talked about has been with us about 9 or 10 years. He's also a Haitian immigrant, and he struggled. He'd work hard. He worked in the school system as a teacher, and he'd sell a little bit, and then he wouldn't sell anything for weeks, months, even 6, 8 months would go by, Wayne, and nothing. And one day he listened to our president, Ayo Olusende, who had given a speech on your why. What is your why? And Ayo had written a book called The Why Factor, which is an Amazon read. It's a great book, recommend it to anybody. And this particular gentleman sat and thought for a long time. He said, well, I really need to help my mother in Haiti and build her a house, because no one's going to build it if I don't build it. And he said, I really need to get a new car. And as soon as that coalesced in his mind, Wayne, it was like someone flipped the switch. It was like this guy became Superman overnight. It was like unbelievable. He started selling like there was no tomorrow, and building a team and training. And he went from nothing, Wayne, nothing, 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 to him and his team doing $1 million a year in cookware sales in a 12-month period.
Yep.
But what happened there is the coaching had been the same all along, but he finally discovered the why. And the reason I've got to go to work is to help my mother. The reason I got to go to work is I got to get a car. And when you are setting goals, first you got to have that vision, that why, then the goal, I'm going to do this much in this amount of time, then the action plan, how I'm going to do it. Along the way, though, well, I see we lost Wayne. He'll come back. Along the way, What we've got to do is have patience to lead and lead and lead and keep calling and keep following. You talked about my friend Walter, who's our sales manager here. Wayne, he started here 13 years ago. And he's a great young man. And his daughter was 2 years old. And she was, I met him on a sales presentation. She was walking around in a diaper. She was 2 years old. And I started him as a part-time salesman. And I kept begging him to come full-time. He couldn't see himself doing it, Bruce. He just couldn't, you know, see himself living on commission and see himself doing it. So he worked and worked and worked. He didn't get promoted at his job. He worked for the city, and there was a lot of nepotism, and he was unhappy. And I teased him all the time about it. I said, you got to come on in here and work for me, man. And no. Then he went to college for 2 years. Wayne, he said, I won't be working much anymore. I'm going to college to get a bachelor's degree in administration. I said, well, that's great. Away you go. And I remember when he graduated college, we sent him a note and sent him pictures and everything. And he got the bachelor's degree. But still, he went back to the city and they still ignored him. And they didn't promote him, even though he had that degree. Finally, about 3 years ago, he'd had enough. And that's the day that patience pays off. Boom. He went full-time, and then he's gone from being a new full-time guy to being a good distributor to being our top distributor and our sales manager. And we're trying to help him plan for becoming a dealer in the company, Wayne. But one of the things we have to have as leaders is patience, because I've followed him for 10 years. Now,
I know that out of all the people I know, Dave, you've probably got more patience than anybody.
Well, no, that would be my wife. She's
I wanted to clarify that. Yeah. But anyway, Bruce, jump in.
One of the central tenets of coaching is to help people remove self-limiting thoughts. Okay. Self-limiting thoughts. And I know what I can glean as part of the Salad Master culture is that it's important to have these shows, right? To do shows. And that's where the magic happens, right? If you have so many shows, theoretically. And again, I'm an outsider here, so I just...
No, you're doing right. You're right.
Pick up the tea leaves from Wayne here. So let's say there's this person, you know, that has maybe a why, but yet he's not setting up these shows. He's some sort of a, what have you had people like that you've used some sort of coaching technique to cut through those self-limiting thoughts, to get to the point where now they're, you know, doing the shows and hitting their marks and doing their swimming in the pond there.
You know, that's a perfect question. And literally 80% of the sales force goes through that weekly.
Yeah.
They can't find the next presentation. And the hardest part of selling anything in any organization, whether it's life insurance or real estate, is prospecting.
Right.
And sales people have an aversion to prospecting. So there's two things. One, you can give them the next methodology. You can say, Bruce, I want to show you a new method we got. Here it is. And I want to give you a script. Here it is. But the other part of it is you've got to role play with them and you got to go and do it. You've got to lead from in front. And if you say, come on with me, we'll do it. It gets easy. And if they know they can rely on you, it's a double-edged sword. It's first they know they can rely on you. They say, boy, I've got a leader who will help me. But the other edge on that sword is I've got a leader I can't let down because he or she helps me. So, there's a million ways to get the next presentation, the next demonstration, the next customer, but they're all fraught with difficulty. And the difficulty is they're going to hear the word no one way or another. they're going to hear the word no. And salespeople hate to be rejected. They hate it. So the other trick we can do with them, Bruce, is to teach them to count no's. And if we tell them, you'll get paid for every 100 no's, you'll earn this much money. For every 1,000 no's, you'll earn this much money. And once we switch a no into a positive instead of a negative. So it's part psychology, but it's mostly help and leadership. Whether it doesn't matter what product we're selling. There's hundreds of listeners that are running all kinds of businesses or organizations, etc. My favorite business to observe is a friend of mine that runs a restaurant, and I see how he undervalues people and screws up, and then he loses all his cooks. And it's the same thing. It's the same principle, whether it's sales or any other business, you know? So if you got someone that's failing, give them something new, which is always exciting. Tell them how well it's worked for someone else, which is exciting. But do it with them if you can. Take them by the hand, do it with them. And you'll be a success, but most importantly, they'll be a success. And then if you keep on creating those successes, they bring other people with them.
And I think that's what we can do, depending on the venue with the coaching, is that we can kind of be there as coaches or clients in some respects to be the training wheels, to be that set of training wheels as they're trying to acquire this new behavior or, you know, this goal, this target behavior. Yeah. And stuff like that. So I think that's really good. I like the counting of the no's. It reminded me of my dating career at Texas A&M. Sorry, man. I was the only guy that wasn't in the military back in the early 80s. It was a beat down. Anyway, but seriously, for every 100 no's, you'll get one date. Just kidding. But yeah, that's a great... But at least you kind of know that it's a variable. What's that called? The Pavlovian. It's a variable interval response reinforcement schedule. So thing, and that's a good thing, and that can sustain you through the pain of the nose. So that's good stuff, man. I appreciate you sharing that.
David reminded me too of Zig Ziglar said a lot of times you have to get 7 no's when you're closing a sale. And so he was on a presentation one time. It was a Style Master presentation in his early days, and he was just sitting there doing check marks every time they say no. And the guy said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well," he said, "I was trained that after the 7th no that you buy." And he said, "I just want to let you know that you already got 6." And so it just comes down to that same thing.
I mean, well. In the sales game, and Bruce, we teach this to new people, there's nothing a customer wants more in the world than to say no. They want to establish their prominence. I'm buying anything. And so once they get that no out of the way, they lose a lot of energy. Because it's hard to sustain all that aggressive no. And then they say no once, and you can say, well, I understand that. Let me show you something else.
Right.
They say no again. You say, it's no problem at all. We do have an economy model, and now pretty soon all that energy has gone away and they're actually catch themselves looking, and the next thing you know, darned if they don't buy something.
There you go.
But all that's got to be taught. And, you know, Wayne, we talked about enthusiasm yesterday, Wayne, and I wanted to reiterate a story about enthusiasm. Do you mind if we go down that road?
We got about 3.5 minutes.
Okay, tell you the story quick. Wayne has always said, what sells Salad Master? It's enthusiasm. Going back in the old days, Bruce, I could be the ad calls that people wanted a job. And, you know, that phone had to ring. That was our money, is having new people come on board. Well, one day the phone rang, and I answered the phone all pumped up, all enthusiastic, all excited, and it was the wrong number. And the guy said, what are you so excited about? I said, well, I'm excited because business is great. People are fantastic and things are going up and we're just doing great. And by the way, that was a lie. There was a snowstorm. We hadn't sold anything for 4 days. Our shipment was late. Payroll was lousy. Attitude stunk. And he said, really? I said, yeah. I said, you know, what's your name? He said, Otto. That's an unusual name. I said, well, Otto, come on in here and have an interview. He said, nah, I got a good job. I said, well, you know, Otto, you got nothing to lose. Come and see me tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. We'll have some fun. I'll buy you a cup of coffee. Well, I hung up the phone and forgot. Next day, I'm in the back room and the secretary comes to get me and she says, Mr. Bryant, there's a guy named Otto here. Well, I come out this ugly looking Otto with 3 days growth of beard and an old sweatshirt and baggy pants. And he's in my office and he's slouching. He's got a cigarette and he's, yeah. And he's halfway listening. But anyway, I did the whole presentation and I said, well, look, Otto, you look like a great guy. If you'd like to work, let me know. I said, you know, we got a good thing going here. And home he went. And I'm enthusiastic. Next day, I'm in the back room getting ready for the meeting. Secretary comes to get me. She says, there's a gentleman out here. I think he wants to buy one of our machines. Come and see him right now. I go out. There's this handsome guy in a $700 leather trench coat with this big fur collar and these shiny, shiny brown leather boots. I said, yes, sir. How can I help you? He said, you don't recognize me, huh? I'm Otto. Let's go to work. Wow. Now, Otto was a killer salesman, and he was attracted by my enthusiasm. He sold 50 sets in the first 5 weeks.
Hey.
That's the power of enthusiasm. He was trying to play me off and just see whether I really had anything going.
Every phone call matters. Every interaction matters.
Every interaction matters. Bruce, I know our time is up. Thank you so much.
No. Real quick, before we let you go, how can our viewers and listeners contact you, Dave?
Well, I wasn't expecting that, but they could send me an email. Dave at NCSFL for Florida.net. Dave at NCSFL.net. He'll direct them if they can't remember that, but or just look up Salad Master in Tampa, Florida. Bruce, it's been a great pleasure. I hope our listeners got something. Wayne, thanks.
To have you back, Dave. You're awesome.
Absolutely.
Oh, you're too kind. I got work to do. Thank you.
Wayne, how can our listeners get hold of you?
Oh, always same old way, Bruce. Wayne_515@yahoo.com.
All right. Yeah, folks, that was another fantastic show here on the Concierge Coaches Show. Again, this will be archived on the LA Talk Radio website. Then we're on Apple Podcast, and then we're on iHeartMedia. So, yeah, the little podcast that could and several other aggregators carry us as well. You can find us on Instagram at Concierge_coaches and our Facebook page, Concierge Coaches Show. And, of course, I can be reached at ConciergeCoach.net. So with that, we'll bid everybody a great afternoon. Have a safe and blessed week, everybody. And we'll see you here next week on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk.